we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday edition of the program. I'm Walker Wildman. You're listening to American Family Radio. Our website, AFR.net, and the AFR app is available for your perusal. And the AFR app is 100% free. There's nothing about the app that you have to pay for. You can listen to podcasts, listen to live shows, search back on previous episodes. We've got a pretty deep archive there on the AFR app. So download the AFR app. I got to tell you, we don't have many, if any, negative reviews about the AFR app. Everybody I talk to raves about the AFR app, and we've made some improvements to it over the last year or two with the streaming option, made it more reliable. We've done some updates on Android and iOS, so it's at its best place that it's been, and that's the AFR app. Go to your app store and download the AFR app. We got the video up on Facebook and AFA Stream. If you want to watch the show, you can do so on Facebook at the Core's Facebook page and on stream.afa.net. Psalm 141 is where we are this week. And turning our attention to the scriptures, O Lord, I call upon you, hasten to me. Give ear to my voice when I call to you. May my prayer be counted as incense before you, the lifting up of my hands as the evening offering. Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Do not incline my heart to an evil thing, any evil thing, to practice deeds of wickedness with men who do iniquity. And do not let me eat of their delicacies. So here in this psalm, the what I want to point out is verse 2. And that is, the writer here says, this is a psalm of David. But verse 2 says, may my prayer be counted as incense before you, the lifting up of my hands as the evening offering. So this is being described by the writer here as our prayers actually being pleasing to the Lord. That's an interesting angle because, you know, traditionally you look at prayers as something that we're petitioning God to do something on our behalf, right? Doesn't that seem to make up the majority of your prayer? Well, maybe it shouldn't, but that seems to be kind of the place we find ourselves is where we're petitioning the Lord for something. And that's okay. There's a time and a place for that. But the writer here is describing our prayers, our petitions, as being a pleasing thing to the Lord. And so let's not forget, and the Lord's prayer in the New Testament is an excellent model prayer, but let's not forget that our prayers aren't solely about us receiving blessings from God. Our prayers ought to equally be about us blessing the Lord and blessing His name. And that's what verse 2 here says in Psalm 141, that may my prayer be counted as incense before you. May my prayer be counted as a blessing before you. May my prayer be counted as a pleasing offering before the Lord. So in the midst of your prayer life, don't forget that we are to praise the Lord. We are to recognize His holiness, His goodness, His power, and His authority in our lives. That should always be a part of our prayer, even before we make our request known to the Lord. So that's Psalm 141. We've got a special offering available right now over at culturewarrior.movie. So when you go over to culturewarrior.movie, not only can you watch the full Culture Warrior documentary and trailer there, both of those are there, by the way, But you can get the Culture Warrior kit, and I've actually got one of the four items that goes in the Culture Warrior kit. I've got it in studio now, and that's this Culture Warrior DVD set. And we've got the full documentary, the full film online. So if you don't have a DVD player anymore, I completely understand. But the DVD kit does come with some special features that you're not going to get online right now. This is a two DVD set. It's got 2 hours of bonus content, 11 deleted scenes, 24 extended interviews, and the director's commentary, M.D. Perkins, which we've interviewed on multiple occasions. But you can get this Culture Warrior film, DVD, the commemorative issue of the Stand magazine, a bookmark, and my grandfather's book, I Had a Vision, God Had a Plan. That entire Culture Warrior kit, that's what we're calling it, is available at culturewarrior.movie. This is the only place you can find this kit, is over at culturewarrior.movie. So go there, check it out, listen to the entire, watch the entire film, share it with your family and friends, get your Culture Warrior kit by donating a gift of any amount at culturewarrior.movie. We want to share this film far and wide. We want thousands of people to watch it, because it's not, it's more than just a story and a history of AFA and my grandfather, Don Wildman. But it's about how one person can make a difference. And that's really our motto, is that one person can make a difference. And my grandfather's story is just one exhibit in that testimony, in that story. So some pretty interesting stuff. I learned some new things when I watched this film. A couple new things about AFA and my grandfather, but go over to culturewarrior.movie, check it out. Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency is the subtitle. Excellent film put together by American Family Studios, culturewarrior.movie, to check out that film. Order the Culture Warrior kit, donate to American Family Association. It's a great time to do that. Maybe even order some extra kits to give out to your family and friends this Christmas season. Well, turning our attention to some of the stories I want to get to this segment, President Trump defended Pete Hegseth during an interview about a week or two ago, and I played parts of this story, you know, in recent weeks as we talked about this, but I wanted to make sure I got to this. President Trump did a very good job during his sit-down interview with Kristen Welker. I think she's with NBC or MSNBC, NBC, and he defended Pete Hegseth because this is important, all right? Matt Gaetz' nomination failed. Pam Bondi's now the Attorney General nominee. Pete Hegseth, they've just been going after him. I mean, they've just been trying to basically Kavanaugh Pete Hegseth before he even gets a hearing, and it's been very unfair. A lot of these accusations are completely unfounded. Pete Hegseth, we played his comments about his testimony and about how God changed his life. He's not the man that he once was. So all of that being said, I just want to commend President Trump for defending his defense secretary nominee. Let's listen to President Trump on Pete Hegseth.
It looks like Pete is doing well now. I mean, people were a little bit concerned. He's a young guy with a tremendous track record, actually. He went to Princeton and went to Harvard. He was a good student at both, but he loves the military, and I think people are starting to see it. So we'll be working on his nomination along with a lot of others.
Since you bring him up, do you still have confidence in Pete Hegseth?
Yes, I do. I really do. He's a very smart guy. I've known him through Fox, but I've known him for a long time. And he's basically a military guy. I mean, every time I talk to him, all he wants to talk about is the military. He's a military guy.
Well, there you have it. That's President Trump defending Pete Hegseth. You know, Pete Hegseth made the comments the other day about how the military needs to be restored to being operated based on merit and based on lethality. And that's one thing that's been lost in our Pentagon. The Pentagon's so not focused, and they're trying to nation build. They're trying to run diplomacy. They're trying to do all these things that they're not set out to do. That's not their primary focus. I mean, the military is there to defend the homeland and win wars. And we've gotten totally sidetracked over the last several decades to where the Pentagon's doing everything but winning wars. And they don't even know what it's like. They don't even know what it tastes like to win a war anymore. Because we've been too busy trying to nation build. And, you know, if you want to look at an example of this, look at the deployment when Biden tried to send, when he did send that, I think it was a Navy unit. It possibly could have been an Army unit, but he sent them over to Gaza with that floating pier unit with multiple ships. And he sent them over to Gaza to do what's a pretty rudimentary military operation, and that is to deploy a floating pier off the coast of Gaza so that foreign aid could be deployed into the Gaza Strip, and so that, you know, Israel could get some of the heat off their back when it comes to this aid coming into Gaza. That kind of got overlooked, but that turned out to be an epic disaster. It turned out to be an epic disaster where the pier was falling apart. Actually, multiple service members were severely injured in that operation. And it was an epic failure on all fronts. I think there were only like a small fraction of aid that was able to get into there. But that was an embarrassment. And who was held accountable for that? I don't know anybody. I don't even know if they haven't had any hearings about that. But we couldn't deploy, our military couldn't deploy a floating pier unit in a relatively calm area in the Mediterranean without a disaster ensuing. And there were many analysts that were talking about, like, if we were having to deploy into the South China Sea in a spat over Taiwan with China, and we're trying to deploy these floating pier units, well, we can't even do that, because that would be in an actual war zone. And so that was just one example. And then the Afghanistan withdrawal is another example of unmitigated failure. And, you know, who was held accountable for that Afghanistan withdrawal fiasco? Because we left how many billion dollars worth of military equipment in Afghanistan that the Taliban's now driving around, including armored vehicles and weapons? This is stuff we've got to get answers for, Bobby. And there's almost so much stuff that we have to get answers for that we're going to spend like the first 6 months of the Trump administration just uncovering previous scandals.
He's going to have a really busy first day, but that's that debacle in Afghanistan with the loss of all that life and equipment to the tune of $85 billion.
Yeah. Yeah, who does that?
Who gets to the bottom of that?
Yeah, and reportedly, Mark Milley, the general, you know, said, "Oh well, it'll cost more to get the equipment out than it will to keep it in." Well,
yeah, right.
We should have thought about that. Like, this is stuff that should have been thought about.
Yeah, they don't have logistics planners for that, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah,
how they get it?
They're
in
supposed
there,
to specialize in that. Yeah. Yeah, but we get into these wars and then we get halfway through them and everybody's looking around like, what are we doing here? And then that's how you end up with the Afghanistan fiasco, where you leave $85 billion in military equipment to our foreign adversary. And at the end of the day, we went into Afghanistan with the Taliban in control, and then we leave and the Taliban's in control. It's like, what on this earth are we doing? That in and of itself is a scandal. And so my point is that Pete Hegseth is the guy for the job. I mean, he's absolutely the guy for the job. We got to be focused on winning wars and defeating our enemies. That's it. That's you literally have one job, and that's to win wars and defend the homeland. That's your sole job. Let's get it done. And next time you're called on to deploy a relatively rudimentary operation of deploying a floating pier in the Mediterranean, let's do it and let's do it well. But they didn't, and nobody was held accountable for that. And China was probably laughing at that, because now they know that we're not ready for the South China Sea. We're not ready to defend Taiwan, because, you know, we can't do it in the Mediterranean in partnership with Israel. All right, folks, it's At the Core. We'll be back in a few minutes. Special guest coming up. You won't want to miss it. We'll be back in a few.
For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. According to a recent study published by the Christian Post, 76.3% of all abortions are obtained by, quote, God-fearing women, unquote, with 68.7% who identified themselves as Christian women and 18% of all abortions obtained by self-described born-again or evangelical women. A corresponding CareNet study found that many women with unplanned pregnancies go silently from the church pew to the abortion clinic, convinced the church would gossip rather than help. America's greatest need is repentance. When the hearts of the American people turn to God, everything else will be impacted.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
As the world is changing around us, the ministry of AFA is staying anchored in God. If the Lord has gifted you to be a giver, we ask that you remember AFA in your year-end giving. As a good steward, you know the tax advantages of year-end giving. There's a variety of options for giving, ranging from cash gifts to stock donation to real estate. Some of the more creative gifts have earlier tax deadlines, so why not contact a representative of the AFA Foundation today to discuss your year-end gift? They can help you set up your donation now and make it effective by the proper date. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345. Your support is key to our ministry in Jesus' name. Beat the rush by calling now, 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Hello everyone, Tim Wildman here with American Family Association and American Family Radio. Hey, in 2025, we have a brand new tour available. It's in October, and it's going to Boston. What a wonderful trip this will be to see one of the most significant cities in all of American history. Boston, Lexington, Concord, and the whole story of the Freedom Trail. It's going to be absolutely wonderful. And that's in October of 2025. So we also have the tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then the Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown tours as well. So that's coming up in 2025. If you want to read about any of these, go to wildmangroup.com. W-I-L-D-M-O-N group.com, wildmangroup.com, for all the information on Boston, D.C., and Williamsburg. Hope to see you on one of these in 2025.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Core. Well, you know, there's so many scandals that have happened under Biden that I even forget to rattle them all off. But during the break, Bobby reminded me that Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin went MIA for like a week in the hospital. And some of that time he was actually unconscious. He was not able to perform his duties fully. And Biden didn't find out about it till after the fact. And the public found out about it through a leak with the media. So that in and of itself was a scandal that should have been worthy of being removed from office, because his team should have disclosed that to the president, you would think, the commander in chief.
Right, and his undersecretary couldn't even cover for him.
No, yeah.
She totally dropped the ball on him.
Yeah, she was on vacation, by the way.
That's
she
right.
She was in.
Good plan.
Yeah, she was in. She was in the
Jamaica,
Bahamas.
The Bahamas.
Yeah, yeah, she was in the Bahamas. Moving on to our next guest. Michael Hurst. He is the chairman of the Mississippi Republican Party. He's also a former U.S. attorney who served under the Trump administration. He's with us now to talk about the latest in conservatism in Mississippi and nationally. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Walker. Great to be here.
Well, Mike, tell us a little bit about your history. Obviously, the chairman of the Republican Party, but you also were a U.S. attorney. So, and you ran for AG in Mississippi several years back when Jim Hood was still in office. But tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up as a chairman.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I grew up in Newton County, the big city of Hickory, Mississippi, just south of you guys. I went to college there at East Central Community College in Decatur, and then I went over to Jackson, to Millsaps
college. Wife and I got married after first year of law school, and we moved to D.C., where she worked for Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott, and I was in law school at George Washington University. Did the D.C. thing for a while, worked for a law firm, worked on Capitol Hill, first House Judiciary Committee as counsel in the Constitution Subcommittee, and then working for my congressman from back home, Chip Pickering. Came back home in 06, went straight to work in the U.S. Attorney's Office as an assistant United States attorney, and just a blind federal prosecutor, prosecuting everything from immigration to tax fraud to public corruption. And then, as you mentioned, in 2015, I felt the Lord leading me to run for office, and doing this crazy thing, running for Attorney General of Mississippi against a 12-year incumbent, Jim Hood. And it was an incredible experience. Unfortunately, came up a little short, but then I started a nonprofit law firm, the Mississippi Justice Institute, at the Mississippi Center for Public Policy, and did some incredible work there on charter school litigation, some economic liberty issues, some Open Meetings Act. And then President Trump appointed me in 2017 to be the United States Attorney for the Southern District of Mississippi, and served for the president for 4 years as U.S. Attorney, and then been in private practice in Jackson for the last 4 years.
Well, Mississippi's been a pretty strong conservative state for a while now. And, you know, the Democrats, thankfully, you know, we've been able to fend them off in Mississippi for a while now, even though there's been a lot of money poured in to a lot of these races, mostly the federal and the statewide races, including the Jim Hood race that you ran against the incumbent there. Right. I'm just thankful the Hood days are behind us. That was a disastrous period where our own AG wouldn't defend our laws. But thankfully we've changed out there. But where is Mississippi kind of on this map of conservative states? Where would you rank us, and what are some things you think we can do better at and improve on?
Well, I think if you look at the most recent presidential election, I mean, President Trump got almost 61% of the vote here in Mississippi. I think we're one of the most conservative states in the nation. But I'm the kind of fellow that something is never good enough. And so I would say that, especially in my new role as chairman of the Mississippi Republican Party, I really want to push our party and push our elected officials and push our citizens back to the platform, remind people what we as Republicans, what we as conservatives believe, and what brings us together. And I think if we do that, Walker, I think our state will be better off for it. And I think we will be a more conservative state overall. And I think conservatism equals good policy, and good policy makes for, you know, a better life here for our citizens.
Yeah, I want to put you on the spot on school choice. I know you mentioned you did some litigation on charter schools. I'm sure you're very familiar with this topic. I know that's been kind of like a hurdle that the Republican Party as a whole just hasn't been able to get over as far as fully leaning into school choice, and maybe even some tax credits for private education or things like that. But what would you like to see there? Like, what do you think we need to do to get over that hurdle? Because the education lobby, for better or worse, is pretty strong in Mississippi. A lot of teachers, everybody knows a teacher, right? My family's, you know, got several teachers in it, either retired or current. And it always gets framed as this like anti-teacher thing to have school choice, but that's actually not true. It's very pro-student. And the public schools that do well and that excel, you know, they're going to benefit from school choice. So, talk about school choice and maybe what we need to do to get over that hurdle and implement some good policies here.
No, I think those points you raised were exactly on point. I mean, if you look at the Republican Party platform in Mississippi, it says, we believe our schools must respect and reinforce parental authority and should make every effort to involve parents in the education of the children. You know, when people ask me about school choice, the first thing I said is, what is the point of education? Like, what are we trying to do here? What's the goal? The goal is to give the best education to students, to kids, as we can possibly do as a society. And so these arguments about, you know, school buildings or institutions or administrators or teachers, it all comes back to, how do we best educate a child? And the person who knows how to best educate a child is that child's parent. So, yeah, I'm a full believer in school choice. I just think that, you know, it gets back to conservatism. We as conservatives believe the best type of authority is at the local level. And we should empower our parents, empower our children, because they're going to know what's best for them. And so that's where I come down on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, these schools that are working hard, they're doing well, people are going to flock to them. So if these administrators and teachers are confident in their programs, confident in their district, then they've got nothing to worry about. It's these failing districts that are failing students that are really fearful of this school choice because they don't want people to have a choice. And that in and of itself is a problem. Let's talk about
what I can tell you real quick before we leave that topic. When I represented some parents and children at charter schools in Jackson, we were fighting for the constitutionality of the state charter school system, the whole laws, legal system that set up charter schools. And Walker, what I can tell you is when you sat in the living room or you sat in the kitchen with those parents and those kids in South or West Jackson, and they are effectively stuck in Jackson. They don't have the means to move. They don't have the resources to just get up and go somewhere else and might have a better school system. When you look in their eyes and all they want to do is to have an opportunity to raise their kids at the same education level, and you got Jackson Public School superintendent who wants to keep the school shut down for 2.5-3 years because of COVID, when every other school has opened up, pushing those kids in JPS back for years and years. I mean, we probably lost a generation because of those decisions. That we should not be holding those kids and those parents back when they want to do better for themselves. So yeah, when you sit down across the table from someone and you hear that, I don't know how anybody can be against school choice.
That's right. That's right. And yeah, when you keep the focus on what's in the best interest of the child and the families, it's a no-brainer there that we need school choice. Let me ask you about some of the federal policies, because you were a U.S. attorney, so you know all about the law and order and the priorities that the Justice Department sends down to the various offices. Let's talk about mass deportation. You know, the media tries to make it sound scandalous and it's going to, you know, break the bank, even though they don't even have any semblance of what it means to break the bank. But talk about kind of the practicality of what large deportation efforts would look like, because it's actually not that complicated. It just takes state and local partnership with the feds, right?
That's exactly right. You know, when I was an assistant United States attorney, going back to probably 2008, you know, we executed big immigration enforcement actions down in the Hattiesburg area with regard to some manufacturing facilities down there. I think we arrested 600 illegal aliens one morning shift at one plant.
Wow.
And we were able to deport them. When I was U.S. attorney, fast forward to 2019, we executed search warrants around, I think, 5 poultry plants in central Mississippi and arrested 680 illegal aliens at one shift in multiple plants. And we were able to deport those, the ones we didn't prosecute, we were able to deport those. So this made up hysteria by the mainstream media that, you know, there will be all kind of calamity and you just can't do mass deportation is just nonsense. It can be done. We here in the Southern District of Mississippi, when I was U.S. attorney under President Trump, did it. And, you know, again, it's just a matter of enforcing our laws. All these Democrats in Congress complain about all of this. Well, you know what? If you don't like it, change laws. But you know what they do, Walker? They don't change laws. They would rather complain about it. They'd rather run on it. They'd rather use it as a political football than actually doing something constructive. And so, again, you put the right U.S. attorneys in those jobs. You put the right people ahead of ICE. Tom Holman, oh, my goodness, having that guy run this, I've met Tom a few times when I was U.S. attorney. He is going to do a fantastic job. And frankly, it just means our country is going to be a law and order country once again. I know that's a shocking revelation. I mean, that we would require the Department of Justice to do its job, but that has to be exhilarating for the American people that we're going to have people in there doing their jobs again.
Yeah, I think it is. And you know, President Trump's going to have to, and he will, he's got a good team, but this is going to be information warfare. I mean, they're going to have to do a lot of press conferences, a lot of media, a lot of town hall type stuff in order to combat this fear mongering that's going on in the media. And I think President Trump and his team have proven that they can win the information battle. I mean, many people are now talking, and the history books will show that the Trump campaign, they absolutely dominated the digital realm with podcasting and otherwise. Let me ask you about one of our radio hosts, Abraham Hamilton, used to be an assistant district attorney in New Orleans. And he's familiar with how the deputizing of local and state officers goes. But isn't there precedent where the federal government can deputize local and state officers to help facilitate ICE type law enforcement activities?
Yeah, there's a program. I think it was in the 1996 Immigration Act called 287G program, where basically ICE agents, you have two type of ICE agents. You have what's called the Homeland Security Investigations, which does normal criminal type investigations. And then on the other side, you have deportation and removal officers, DRO officers. And those DRO officers would go out to local jails, local prisons, local law enforcement, and you know, work with them, sign them up for this 287G program to help ICE identify in the local jails, in the local prisons, the local DUI arrest that was made last night, things like that, to show these are individuals who are not in this country illegally. And they should, after they, whatever sentence at the local level they get, should be turned over to ICE and deported. We not only did not see that, Walker, in the Biden administration, I spoke with local sheriff's deputies that I knew around the state, and they couldn't even get ICE during the Biden administration to call them back when they told them that they had illegal aliens sitting in their local jails. I mean, that's how bad it was the last 4 years. Yeah. So to have this program in place, and frankly, I mean, I remember when I first became U.S. attorney, the Trump administration was requiring local and state law enforcement to sign up for this. And if they didn't, you know, DOJ might withhold some of those grants that they send out. And I think that's a brilliant strategy, because this should not be a us versus them. This is all law enforcement activities, and we should expect our state and locals to get on board and helping the federal government do this.
Yeah, that's right. And when you poll the law enforcement community, the vast majority are fully on board with helping ICE, with helping the DOJ and the FBI or whatever agencies we're talking about here.
Right.
You know, there's going to be some sheriffs, you know, in California or New York that want to buck, you know, the Trump administration. Very few, though. But the vast majority of even federal ICE agents they want to get back to law and order, because they didn't sign up to go soft on crime. They signed up to help the American people, and they're ready, willing, and able to do that with Trump. So I think there's going to be a lot of momentum, a lot of support for the president's agenda. And so we appreciate you coming on, Mike. Appreciate your work in the Mississippi Republican Party as chairman, and we'll touch base again pretty soon, hopefully.
Great to see you, Walker. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks much. That's Mike Hurst. He's the current chairman of the Mississippi Republican Party. He's also a former U.S. attorney under the Trump administration, the first term, where he worked in the Southern District of Mississippi. So if anybody knows about enforcing the laws and our immigration laws and working with ICE, Mike Hurst is the guy. And we appreciate his leadership at the state level leading the Mississippi Republican Party. And I was very supportive of Mike when he ran for AG in Mississippi. He's the real deal. So glad to have him where he is. And, you know, that was good to get his insights on kind of the, you know, the layman way of talking about how you do deportations at a broad level. I don't really like the word mass deportations, because that's a term that the media created. I don't like them creating their own terms and then letting us follow them. So whatever we want to call it, but, you know, elevated deportations or broad deportations, whatever we want to call it, are just normal deportation efforts. The only reason that we've got to call it mass deportations is because President Biden let a mass number of illegal immigrants into our country. Now, if I were Trump, that's what I would say. The only reason we're having to have mass deportations is because your buddy Joe let mass numbers of illegal immigrants into our nation. Point blank. So if it weren't for Biden, we wouldn't be in this situation. But because of Biden, we are in this situation, and I'm here to fix it. And when you talk to the public like that and you explain to them straight up what's going on, there is broad support. I'm talking 80, 90% support amongst the public for deporting the illegals. Point blank, deporting the illegals. And I don't want to hear one liberal cry about how much it costs, because the last time I checked, we're still sending billions to Ukraine.
The feature-length documentary Culture Warrior, Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency, premiering November 11th, chronicles the life and ministry of Don Wildman. It takes you through the founding of the National Federation for Decency, what has become AFA. It's a call to stand firm for righteousness and shows how that resolve can make a huge difference in our world.
If we lose this cultural war, we're going to have a hedonistic, humanistic society.
Find out more and watch the trailer at culturewarrior.movie.
Thoughts of the child you were carrying keep pouring over in your mind. A deep, unrelenting sadness overshadows your days, and you wonder if you will ever feel whole again. There is hope and healing from a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline, 866-482-LIFE, and talk with someone who has been where you are. Your call is confidential, and we will help you find healing. 866-482-LIFE.
Did you know there's a tool that allows you to make a gift to the American Family Association and receive fixed income payments for life? That's right, it's called a charitable gift annuity. It's simply an agreement between you and AFA that allows you to make a gift of cash or property, perhaps appreciated stock, securities, and in exchange, you receive a charitable donation, a partial income tax deduction, and you'll receive fixed income payments for life for you or you and your spouse and a beneficiary. And then at your death, the American Family Association keeps the gift. It's an incredible way for you to support the culture transforming work of the American Family Association and ensure that continues for generations. If you want to learn more, just contact the team at afafoundation.net.
Please give us a call, 1-800-326-4543, extension 345, or you can visit us at afafoundation.net. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
This is the Lost in Translation Ministry Minute. Here now is your host, Dr. Baruch Korman.
And we'll see this in the weeks to come based upon the teaching of Messiah. We will not experience the wrath of God. But people in the past have been persecuted for their faith. People presently have been persecuted for their faith. And in the end times, there is coming the worst. Hear this. The worst time of persecution for believers. Don't believe a false teaching that we're just going to escape that. No, it's the suffering that's going to document our faith. Get ready, because the time is approaching.
Learn more about the teaching ministry of Dr. Baruch Korman at loveisrael.org. You'll find videos on almost any biblical topic on his YouTube page and on the My Bible Study app. That's loveisrael.org.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to The Core. Walker Wildman here with you on this edition of the program. Our Activate Summit is coming up in June, the 12th through the 14th. Activate.afa.net is that URL, activate.afa.net. Biblical bedrock, building on the authority of Scripture, is our theme. Once again, the dates are June 12th through 14th, coming up in 2025. And for the month of December, we do have a 20% off code. Earlybird20 is the code. Earlybird20 is the discount code. You'll get 20% off your ticket order for our Activate Summit coming up in June of 2025. The ages for the kids program is 6 to 12. So 6 to 12 is the program for Activate Kids. If you're 13 or over or older, you'll be able to sit in the main session with your parents or whoever you come with. And 5 and under come in free, by the way. Children 5 and under come free to our Activate Summit 2025. The pricing, since I mentioned the 5 and under coming free, $75 for ages 13 and up, because they'll be in the main session. $75 for ages 13 and up. $50 for ages 6 to 12. $50 ages 6 to 12. When you look at what you're getting, folks, it's a good deal. When you look at what you're getting, it's a good deal, because we're talking about 2 days, maybe 2.5 days, of content. Actually, yeah, it is 2.5 days of content. excellent speakers. Todd Herman, Alex McFarland, Ed Vitagliano, Abraham Hamilton III, Frank Turek, and many more will be at our Activate Summit this summer, 2025. And while you're in town, you can come visit our headquarters here in Tupelo, visit our studios, check out our staff in June. So we'd love to have you come to the Activate Summit 2025, June 12th through the 14th are the dates, activate.afa.net. Well, speaking of mass deportations, since that's the term that the left decided to come up with, President Trump was doing this press conference on Monday, and man, I don't know about y'all, but President Trump, he almost seems better with the media than he's ever been. You know, he's always been kind of brash and you know, New York style, and he's got a little bit of humor, you know, mixed in. And everybody liked that about Trump, right? The businessman, the, you know, not taking any hostages. But here recently, especially in the last few months of the campaign and now, I mean, he seems more relaxed and more just relatable, the way he handles the media. I mean, at the same press conference that we're about to play a clip from, there was a journalist that asked him about, will you preemptively strike Iran to prevent them from either developing nukes or striking Israel or something like that? And he was like, basically, why would I answer that? Like, why would I even give credence to that? Why would I tell you, a journalist, that I'm either not or I'm going to preemptively military strike Iran? Like, that doesn't even make sense. So he kind of went on this rant about, why would I tell you that? If I was going to do it, I wouldn't tell you. And if I wasn't, I wouldn't tell you. And, you know, it was brilliant how he handled it. And it's refreshing to have a commander in chief that can actually answer questions at a press conference. By the way, there's this, this Project Veritas leak of a National Security Council staffer, actually Jake Sullivan's, associate or assistant, executive assistant, basically, in the National Security Council office. There's Project Veritas video, and maybe we'll bring these clips in after the new year, of him talking about how Biden's completely out of it. Like, Biden's not there. Biden doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know where he is. He actually called Jake Sullivan's office multiple times, and Jake Sullivan was actually on a trip with Biden overseas. And the president called Jake Sullivan's office in D.C. asking for where Jake is. And the guy was like, Mr. President, Jake's with you. He's on the trip with you. And 2 minutes later, President Biden, this is according to this Project Veritas clip, President Biden called back to Jake Sullivan's office in D.C. and said, you know, I'm looking for Jake. And the guy said, Mr. President, Jake Sullivan's with you. He's on the trip with you. And, but Biden acted like he didn't even know that he just got off the phone with this guy. So there's serious questions. There's serious questions about his not is he on his A. It's not the question now at this point is not is he on his A game anymore, but it's like, is he even there anymore? All right. This is not like, you know, Biden's kind of losing it. No, like the question is, does he even have it at all, Bobby?
Such a consequential president of the United States, a Mount Rushmore kind of president.
Oh, my goodness. Nancy Pelosi. That was her batting cleanup. Because if I'm not
that
mistaken.
That is just so good. That's so evergreen.
That Pelosi clip was after she haggled him to step down. And then she went on the Sunday shows talking about how great he was,
putting the Band-Aid on the sucking chest wound.
Yeah. She talked Biden into giving up his campaign. Which may go down as a fatal mistake, you know. Now Biden was underwater by 20 points with Trump, but so maybe it was a wise move. but still, in my opinion, Biden was better than Harris. But nonetheless, we could Monday morning quarterback that. Which that's not saying a lot, by the way, to say Biden's better than Harris. But nonetheless, this this question about Biden's competency is a real question. And I think we'll find out stuff when President Trump's team gets in there, assuming they haven't, you know, burned all the documents in the White House. But, you know, this is kind of comical because of how insane this is. But at the same time, on a more sober and serious note, it's kind of frightening. It's kind of frightening that we've got a commander in chief that, according to news reports and according to, you know, undercover interviews, we got a commander in chief that really doesn't even know anything that's going on. He doesn't even know much of anything that's going on. I mean, this is a major national security issue, and January 20th can't come soon enough for President Trump to take over the helm. Speaking of President Trump, let's jump back to the topic that I started this rabbit trail on, and that is President Trump telling Central and South American nations that, yes, you will take back all of your illegals that you sent up here. Clip two.
In terms of your mass deportation plans, have you had any preliminary discussions with countries like Venezuela, from where the Tren de Aragua gang is now popping up?
They'll take them back.
They're going to take them back?
They're all taking them back, yep. And if they don't, they'll be met very harshly economically. Okay, they'll all take them back. You know, Venezuela and other countries were not behaving very well with us during my administration, and within 24 hours, they were behaving very well. They'll all take them back.
They'll take them all back. Yes, they will. Do you want to know why? Because we send these nations billions of dollars. We send these countries billions of dollars. Also, we buy billions of dollars worth of products that are made in these Central and South American nations. So we've got the upper hand here. We are the dominant alpha on the block on this continent. And we can tell them what we're going to do. There's no question about it. Anybody who says that so-and-so nation is not going to accept illegal immigrants being shipped back to them is severely underestimating our standing on the world stage. Our standing has been diminished, but it has not been diminished that much. And it's really indicative. If you think we can't send criminals back to their homeland, then how do you think we're going to compete on the world stage against China and Russia and Iran? Like, if we can't handle Guatemala, how are we going to handle China? Are you kidding me? So we can send them back. We're going to send them back, President Trump said. There's not going to be a problem. This is not going to be a scandal. It's non-controversial. The foreign citizens that don't belong in our land are going back to where they came from. And it's their problem to fix. We're tired of fixing everybody's problems. Speaking of fixing everybody's problems, I'm tired of fixing everybody's wars. I'm tired of fixing everybody's wars. And I want to know whose idea it was to boot Assad and allow Syria to go to ISIS and Al-Qaeda and whoever else, whatever other, you know, villains are running Syria. Did the U.S. and the CIA, did they foster this environment of Syria falling to no man? Just in time for President Trump to have to clean up the mess? I mean, you want to tell me that Syria's been under Assad's control for who knows how long, and then all of a sudden, in December of 2024, just 4 weeks after the election, all of a sudden, there's a uprising in Syria, and then now it's under the control of ISIS and Al-Qaeda? And I'm not saying Assad's a good guy, but these guys aren't good either. And at least with Assad, you knew what you were dealing with. Now we don't know what we're dealing with. And so I just find it quite ironic that basically in the final month of the presidency, Biden's team is handing President Trump not just like one dumpster fire, but like five dumpster fires. We've got dumpster fires domestically. We've got dumpster fires in Ukraine. We've got a dumpster fire over in Israel, in the Middle East, in Syria. And so this needs to be looked into. We need to look in the first, one of the first things President Trump needs to do is to look into what on earth happened in Syria to make things drastically change within a matter of 24 hours. And was Biden's Department of Defense and CIA and State Department, were they anywhere in the mix on booting Assad and giving Syria over to Al-Qaeda and ISIS? And, you know, this is, and then everybody can make the case about whether it's better if Assad's in charge or these other guys are in charge. They're all bad apples. They're all bad dudes, okay? There's nothing good going on in Syria when it comes to, like, having some, you know, democracy-driven, you know, Western-friendly leader. That's out of the picture. But why do we need to be involved over there? And if we are going to be involved, do we need to be on the side of stoking chaos? Because that seems to be all that America does when you look at it. And this is why the vast majority of Americans, when you poll them now, they're very war weary. And they're very actually kind of protectionist now. And I don't think that's because of the spate of nationalism. I think that's because we've created so many, to use the word, dumpster fires now. We've created so many dumpster fires overseas that our citizens, our voters are like, yeah, we just need to stop touching stuff over there. Like, we need to stop messing stuff up. Because we go into places, Iraq, Afghanistan, now Syria, we go into places, And Lindsey Graham says, we got to have regime change. Well, no, that's a terrible idea. And you can make all these cases about how Assad is an evil guy. Well, like, half of the world leaders are like evil guys. So do we need to go into every nation that has an evil leader and just tear it down and create absolute and utter chaos? No. And so President Trump has, not only does he have multiple foreign wars to stop, but also we've got to stop starting more foreign wars. And this, when I talk about the Pentagon and the State Department operating under old operating protocol, regime change, that entire, like, strategy, which we've become apparently experts in, needs to be thrown in the trash. Pretty much anybody in the State Department and Pentagon that even uses the words regime change ought to be terminated. Like, if that's in their vocabulary as a recommendation to the White House, red flag number one. And you can spot these lawmakers. Any lawmaker that says anything about regime change, they don't need to be within 100 miles of the nation's capital. We have created a bad reputation on doing regime change. It has turned into trillions of dollars and millions of lives destroyed in the name of regime change. We gotta come up with a new strategy. Meet Kelsey. When she found out she was pregnant, she wasn't sure where to turn. But after meeting with the counselors at a preborn network clinic who loved and supported her, and after hearing her baby's heartbeat on a free ultrasound, she chose life.
When a mother looks at her child through a sonogram, it does something to you. You know, I ended up deciding to keep my son, who is now 5 years old today. He's amazing. He brings absolute joy to my heart. I could not imagine life without him. Not only did they help me save his life, they saved my life.
By introducing a woman to her baby on ultrasound, a baby's chance of life doubles. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 on your phone and then say the keyword baby. Or you can donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.